There's never been a better time to get outside and experience the benefits of nature. Discover nearby trails and explore the outdoors with AllTrails. Download the free app today and find your outside.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome into the Punt and Pass Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler, joined alongside by my co-host, Jake Fromm. Be sure to follow us on social media. We are at Punt and Pass on X and Instagram. I'm at Drew Butler. He's at Fromm Jake. Make sure you subscribe to the Punt and Pass YouTube channel as well, puntandpass.com. We are back with part two of our awesome interview with maybe our favorite guest so far of the Punt and Pass offseason interview series. He needs no introduction, but I'll give it to you once again. Folks, it's golf season in the Southeast. It is golf season in the great state of Georgia, and we are thrilled to be joined by four-time All-American golfer at the University of Georgia, a five-time PGA Tour winner. He is a two-time member of the Ryder Cup team for Team USA, and he had a hell of a 2025 getting going here in 2026. He finished tied for 12th in the Masters, two second-place finishes in major championships in the PGA Championship and the Open Championship, and he has had two top-five finishes in the U.S. Open. A great friend of mine, a damn good dog, Harris English. Thanks so much for spending some extra time with us, man.
Yeah, man, I'd love to. Love to pick y'all's brain a little bit. I think it'd be good to dive into the similarities between golf and playing quarterback, punting. I mean, I love talking to athletes about kind of what they think about when it's going good, when it's going bad, when you make a mistake. There's so many similarities that we can talk about throughout our sports that I think will be really cool.
I think that's a phenomenal idea. You and Jake talked about the similarities of playing the quarterback position and course management and how you go about playing four rounds of golf in the biggest tournaments in the world. And Harry, I'm sure you're very familiar with it, but a lot of kickers and punters happen to be pretty good golfers, because I think from a technical aspect, kicking and punting is so similar to golf. And of course, I grew up playing golf and then became a kicker or punter when I got into high school. So definitely happy to discuss that. Jake,
let's get something off the rip here first. Which position group or which player are the biggest mental midgets? All right. Is that specialists, quarterbacks, or golfers? All right. Who can just absolutely blow themselves up mentally the most?
What do you think? I think kicker. When I watch kickers trying to kick a game winning field goal, like I almost can't watch it. Like I feel really? So, because I don't want them to miss it, because everything is on them so much, and it's like they couldn't have kicked a field goal the whole game, and they come in to try to win the game, like their whole career, or they're going to be loved or hated on one kick. I think that sucks. Like with golf, we've got so many shots over 72 holes
to like get into the flow of the game and feel it.
Yeah.
It'd be like someone driving for you, hitting the iron shot, getting on the green, and then needing you to hit, you know, a 20-foot birdie putt.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I hadn't done anything. I've been over there getting a hot dog and a few brewskis this whole deal.
Yeah, and like I can handle it. Like if I miss a 10-footer on the last hole to lose a tournament, I can look through that whole round or the round before and like, where did I lose shots to maybe I could have had a 3-shot lead coming in 18 instead of being tied for the lead with one putt to go. So like I can handle that, but riding on 52 or 53 other guys on your team of they're all looking for you to convert that, like kicking to me would probably be the hardest. Like I think quarterback, like you've got the whole game to 20 some odd passes, 30 some odd passes that you could kind of look back and like, well, I should have converted that or shouldn't have thrown an interception there.
Me and Harry have the same brain because that's exactly the way what I would do it. Everybody sure. would see, oh, the last drive. Oh, you missed this pass. So it's like, yeah, but in the second quarter, you know, there was a 3rd-and-7 opportunity. I checked it down and I didn't throw him a good catchable runner's ball. He easily could have gotten the first down. He got stopped. You know, it's 4th-and-2 and 4th-and-1, right? That's my fault, you know, because it goes down in the book as a completion, but it wasn't a very good one, you know? So that's spot on, dude. We think the same.
I'll tell you this. When I was with the Steelers, Mike Tomlin, every Monday, he would put 5 plays on the big screen that decided the outcome of the game. And it could have been a midfield punt in the 3rd quarter that trickled into the end zone, and then it was a touchback, and the offense for the opposing team had great field position or better field position, and they went down there and scored a field goal, which was a 3-point difference. It could have been a dropped pass on a 3rd-and-2 when somebody was wide open in the flat. They didn't catch it. You didn't convert the first down. They scored a touchdown the other way. So I totally get that aspect of it being a team game over 4 periods, 4 quarters. And of course I'll stick up for that because I am a kicker, a punter. But Harriet, hearing what you say about that, I'm going to ask you a question first and then relate it back to kicking. When you're in these tournaments, say it's the 18th tee shot at Augusta National, or say it's that 9-hole playoff that you were in 2021 at the Travelers, these huge leverage moments where you need a putt to continue the playoff going on, you essentially black out in that moment. And when I say that, you don't hear the crowd. You obviously feel the pressure, but you're so Zoom focused that you don't really see or hear anything else because you're so focused on your process and going through the motions of doing what you need to do. Would you say that's a correct assessment?
100%. Yeah. You get so like when I have putts like that in the playoff or coming out a major, like I only see the ball going in. There's only one option. Like I don't see myself missing it. I see the ball going in the hole and it's just like my body just kind of follows my mind and I don't even know what I'm doing really. I just like, that's why you practice. And that's why I practice so intently of like doing my routine every single time. Like I'm sure kickers and punters do, quarterbacks probably do the same thing of like, I want my routine to be so airtight on a 20 footer on the first hole of the Masters. That when I get a clutch putt later in the round, I'm going to do the exact same thing. No matter the circumstance. I think that just keeps you laser focused. And for me, when I'm going through my practice strokes or I'm reading the putt, I'm only seeing the ball going in the hole and I'm not going to putt it until I see that.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I ask you that is because when you relate it to a game winning kick, now before the kicker walks out there and, you know, the camera zoomed in on him and he might be in the net practicing and you see coaches talking to him or teammates coming to tap his helmet saying, go make the kick. We got your back. Like, yes, you hear all that. But as soon as the referee blows that whistle and it's like time to go on the field, everything else, just you get into your process. You don't hear the crowd. You're talking with your snapper. You're talking with your holder. And then when everybody lines up, I mean, snap to kick on a field goal in the NFL, it's 1.28 seconds, right? A punt in the NFL, it's less than 2 seconds from when the ball is snapped to when you punt the ball. So like as soon as the whistle blows, everything else is out the door and you're just into your process. So yes, those are extremely high leverage moments and it's hard to make kicks in the NFL, especially now with guys like Brandon Aubrey for the Dallas Cowboys, who's banging in 70 yarders. I mean, that to me is absolutely insane, but it just goes back to that practice and the things you do in spring, in training camp, in the week leading up to the game. Like that's what you're there for. You got to have that sniper mentality. So I feel like it's so similar to golf. And I always tell young kickers and punters who maybe play golf, like the drop in punting is just like the grip in golf. If you got a bad drop, you got no chance. I mean, it's just as simple as that, right? When you're keeping your shoulders and your hips square and you're punting, it's just like your alignment in golf or turning your hips through the ball. Like, I just think there's so many similarities to kicking and punting. And there's a lot of great former kickers and punters who are excellent golfers. Brett Kern, who was a longtime punter for the Titans, stud. Josh Scobie, scratch golfer. But I'll throw you one, Harris. Have you ever played with Sam Bradford, the former Oklahoma?
I've never played with Sam Bradford. I heard he's really good. I heard he was a good high school player.
Oh, dude, really? he's like a legit plus four. And I had some buddies that played Augusta with him, and they said, like, first look, he shot like 75. They spun it back around, and he went like 4 or 5 under at Augusta. Like, he is a dog. Yeah, he is a dog. On the like golf.
Sam Bradford versus Tony Romo, who wins?
Probably Bradford right now. I haven't seen Bradford in a while. I know Romo's still doing the competitive stuff. They actually just started this.
Is he really thing. Still?
Who, Romo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was out there doing some of the amateur stuff. There's actually a new tour that they started called The Pro. I don't know if you've seen this, Harris, or Jake. Jake, you should get into this. I've been invited twice. I haven't been able to go because of kids' birthdays and just other stuff that I obviously wouldn't miss. But they have started a former athletes tour, and there's four competitions throughout the year, and they're broken up by sports. So there'll be a football one, a baseball one, a basketball really? One, and a hockey one. And they just had one out at Indian Wells in Palm Springs, Harris, where they brought all the guys together. And it's a competitive 3-day event. Matt Ryan won the first event in Texas at PGA Frisco. Matt is a hell of a golfer too.
I've never played with Matt. I heard he can hit it a mile though.
He is a stud. I'm sure he kind of takes that quarterback mentality that Jake just talked about. He's got all the game in the world, and he is ultra competitive. So I've had the opportunity to play against Matt. We were up at Sean McDonough's tournament in Boston last year. He had never seen Boston Golf Club, a great golf club. You should check it out, Harry. And first look, he shot even par. Stud. I was like, damn.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. He's a good player. He is a good
Drew. Player. Drew, you're gonna make me like put a simulator in my house, and like I'm just gonna have to find way and find time. I don't know, but then Harry's talking the whole time, you know, of his process over the years where he's just not hitting as many balls, and he's working on a short game. Which my short game in general, that's like the last thing I want to work on. I want to see how fast and how far I can hit the ball, like. I'll hit my wedges because I know my wedges are important. You know, I mean, just for me having more length than the normal guys, I'm going to have a lot more chances between 80 and 120 yards. But man, there's just something about hitting a driver and like flushing a 4-iron that is just so satisfying to me.
Yeah, keeps you coming back. Yeah, the short game and putting work is very monotonous, but it's probably my favorite thing to practice because there's so many different options. Like I can go on a chipping green and hit 200 different shots from different lies, different club. Like you can just create anything you want out there. Like I get a little bored hitting balls on the range, and that's where you start tinkering with stuff. Like you hit 30 balls and you can hit one of them that you don't like, then I'm going to sit there for 30 minutes trying to figure out why I hit that one ball bad. And it's like you're just kind of digging yourself in a hole of like, no, you just hit 29 out of 30 that were basically perfect. Like, that's fine. That's all you need playing around the golf. So I'm spending most of my time on the chipping green and putting. As monotonous as it is, that's where I feel like kind of makes or break my week or my year in golf. Like, that's what I know I'm good at, and I've got to keep that as a strength.
Yeah, and my own
sound familiar, Jake.
Yeah, and my own microcosm of golf that I know. So, in my 2 years in Washington D.C. with the Commanders, it's like me, Jacoby Brissett, and Sam Howell. Like every day after spring ball, like we'd go play golf somewhere, and like Sam Howell, okay, he could care less about hitting a ball off a tee or hitting an iron shot off the tee. He was 220 yards with the highest banana slice you've ever seen, but he absolutely loved getting around the green and being able to manipulate the ball and different shots. And we were similar in score, and I would drive it 100 yards past him, and like it would kill me. I'm like, dude, there's no way we should be in the same ballpark, but but he was just so much better at the short game than I was. And he absolutely loved it.
Jake, how's your ping pong game? Are you a pretty good ping pong player?
I'm a pretty solid ping pong player. I'm a top three ping pong player in every NFL locker room I've ever been in.
Okay.
We'd have some good matches. To me, ping pong and golf are very similar of like how you manipulate the face, and like short game is a lot like that of like spinning the ball and like, I don't know, using the face, using the paddle to manipulate that ball. So if you're a good ping pong player, then there's no way you should not be a good short game, good chipper and putter.
See, I think my athleticism in not like an arrogant way, but I feel like I overcompensate for like bad technique and fundamentals by athleticism and like knowing how to get it there. But I know my technique sucks, you know, grip, setup and all these other things. And I know I get away with it because I know how to manipulate the face or kind of save myself at the bottom to get it to where it needs to be. But I don't know. I feel like if I spent some time to really dial in technique, I could be okay.
What would your advice be to the casual weekend golfer? And I ask this because there's such a hilarious clip on social media that goes around. It's from Will Zalatoris. I don't know if you've seen this clip. He's on a podcast and they're like, you know, what's your advice to the casual golfer? Like, how do you become a 5 handicap if you're 12? And Will Zalatoris is like, you know, it's really easy to overcomplicate the game of golf. You just got to go out there, birdie every par 5. Don't make doubles, limit your 3 putts, and then you'll be down to a 5 in no time. I'm like, thanks, Will.
Thanks, Will.
That sounds like pretty easy.
What would your advice be?
Start from the green backwards. Like the 3 putts, like if you can dial in your distance to where you're on the green and knowing you're going to 2 putt, you're really good from inside 5 feet. Like you're not going to make dumb bogeys or doubles. Like if you hit the ball good on that hole, you're going to make par at worst, and just work your way backwards. Like if you can just save yourself so many shots by working inside 30 yards of the green. And like you said, a lot of it's technique of, you get in the bunker, like you're hitting a long bunker shot. Like, how do you set up to hit a long bunker shot versus a short, high bunker shot you're going to spin? Chipping out of the rough versus chipping fairway, like bumping a 9 iron versus hitting a 60 degree. Like, there's so many different ways to set up and create shots. Like, that's kind of half the battle, is just knowing how to do it. And then you just work on those certain things and you'll be good out of no time. But when we play so many pro-ams out on the PGA Tour, and I see golfers from some of the worst golfers in the world I've played with in the pro-am, and they're nervous out there. And most of the time I just spend time working with them in the bunker or working with them on chipping, because that's the easiest thing for me to help them with. Like, for them, slicing the ball 70 yards or duck hooking it, like, I don't really know what to tell them in one round of golf that's going to help them better, but I can help them of like in the bunker on chips of like how to make solid contact and like get some control with their chips. Like, I, to me, that's the easiest thing to do.
Have you ever played golf with Kirby Smart?
I've never played golf with Kirby.
Okay. We got to make that change. I'm sure he could impart some wisdom on him. He had to have been going crazy. Did you see the pictures that came out of him over the weekend at Baker's Bay?
I haven't.
You know, he's down at Baker's Bay. God bless him. I mean, you know, the guy has 5 days off a year. He's down there hanging out.
One of the hardest workers in the world.
No question. Lane Kiffin's down there taking pictures of Kirby on the range, blasting him all over social media. The Cavender twins are down there on their bachelorette party taking pictures with him, blasting it all over social
media. I did not see that.
I'm like, can you give the guy a little break? He has legitimately no time off. I thought that was interesting, but
Kirby goes down there to get some privacy, but I guess not.
Guess not. Dude,
no doubt. I say that to kind of bring it back to football for a little bit. Kirby's been incredible. Georgia football has been on a generational run since he's really taken over. And of course, that started with our buddy Jake Fromm here back in 2017. But man, you're a massive Dogs fan, a big Dogs fan, not only football, but basketball as well. And the Hoop Dogs are playing in the NCAA tournament coming up this week.
St. Louis coming up. Jake, was your freshman year Kirby's first year?
So my freshman year was the second year of the Kirby reign. Technically, my recruiting class is like Kirby's first recruiting class. So we were 2017.
And you, correct me if I'm wrong, you were originally committed to Bama?
I was. So I was committed to Alabama my junior year of high school. Kirby was still the DC there. Kiffin actually was the OC there at the time. And, you know, Kiffin's just he's just a different, interesting guy. So we would go over there and start spending a lot more time with Kirby because Kirby was, you know, a Georgia guy. We kind of got each other. You can kind of tell later in the year we'd go over there for games and you can kind of tell, you know, Kirby kind of had something in his back pocket. He's like, I can't tell you what's going on, but just kind of hold out anyway. So he got named the head coach of Georgia and offered me, you know, pretty soon after. And then very quickly after that, committed to Georgia. That's where I always wanted to go. I just never had an offer there at the time.
So you didn't have offer. You didn't have like a standing offer. Wow. I never knew that.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, Bama, South Carolina, and Ole Miss is kind of where it came down to. And
wow,
Bama's definitely the obvious choice of those three.
Wow, I didn't know that. So Kirby coming to Georgia brought you to Georgia.
100%.
Like you would have never come to Georgia unless Kirby was the coach there.
No, I would have had a Tua or a Mac Jones career arc because Tua didn't commit to Bama until after I decommitted and committed to Georgia. So it's like a musical chairs in high school recruiting, which now it's in college in like the transfer portal window, you know, of where the musical chairs where everybody's going. But yeah, in high school back in my day, you know, man, one guy gets an offer and commits, it just kind of starts the whole trickle down effect of where you're going to end up.
And was it Lane Kiffin's offense that intrigued you? Like you go to a school like Bama because it's Bama, or hey, Lane Kiffin runs this offense that I feel like I'm going to fit into?
Yeah, it was more Saban, it was more Bama, you know, buying into the Bama way of doing things. You're going to come in, you're going to win. You know, you're going to get better and you know, have a chance at the next level. Saban's pretty much the driving force there. You can kind of rinse and repeat. Doesn't matter who the OC is, it's going to have Saban lets them run their thing, but there's a lot of the way Saban does things and how he runs his program. But yeah, Saban was really the driving force there.
Yeah. Well, I've never quite understood like how much reign the OC has over the program. Like at Georgia, like
it just depends. Like, so in my opinion, like Kirby never gave up the full reins on the offense until Todd Monken came on the scene at Georgia. And then Kirby's like, hey, this is the NFL guy in here. He knows how to do it, run things. I'm going to worry about being a head coach and worry about defense. And like never went over there at all. I mean, Kirby was always been a defensive guy, but you could tell, you know, like on game day, like later in games, hey, he's going to kind of slow things down on offense and he's going to, he has his hands gripped tight, right, on the whole operation. But it just kind of felt you could see it through the TV, you know, see it, hear it through conversations. Hey, Todd Monken's, you know, he's running the offense, and this is all his thing.
Harry, have you ever spent time with Gunnar Stockton?
I haven't. Yeah. Seems like a great dude. I love, he just like Jake was like the perfect Georgia quarterback. Yeah. I mean, some of the hits he's taken have made me jump out of the chair.
Yeah.
But man, I love the way he goes about it. I love his interviews. You can tell how much the team cares for him and how much he loves the University of Georgia. And he's going to do everything he can to help them win. He's impressive. I hope to meet him someday. Seems like such a good kid.
How many games awesome. Do you get up to a year?
So I went to the Texas game. I actually saw Jake on the sideline for the Texas game. That was a big weekend.
It was.
That was the first home game I've been to in a couple years. I think I went to the Ole Miss game at night a couple years ago where yeah. Harmon brought the claret jug out there. I mean, not as many as I'd like. I want to start going to some good road games.
Yeah.
I've been to LSU a few years ago, been to Tennessee a handful of times, but like now that we brought Texas and Oklahoma in the mix, I want to go out there sometime. I just want to go to some cool road experiences.
Hey, Harry Kiss and Harmon, they were like royalty down there on the sideline for that.
Oh, my God, of course.
Kiss was on fire.
So when Harmon won the Open Championship, did you fly back with him? Do I remember that correctly? That had to have been a pretty fun celebration.
So we roomed together over there. We stayed in the house together. My daughter Amelia had just been born, I think, the week before the Open. Wow. So I had not been doing a whole lot of practicing. So I had a quick trip over there, flew over there, missed the cut. Harmon was playing good. So I brought my Harmon likes staying with me. I don't do it a whole lot, but I'll bring my PS5 and we'll play Madden at the house. So it's fun for us. Like we compete. We did it in college. We played so much NCAA 2010 or 9 or whatever it was back in the day. But that's kind of our thing. Like when we get back to the house after playing golf all day, like that's what we do and have some dinner. So I think I had a little hand in that of keeping his mind off of golf. And I didn't fly back with him, so I actually watched it back here at home. But I knew he was playing really well and as gritty as always. And I loved it when the fans were talking smack to him, and I knew that I was going to fire him up even more. But, yeah, I might have to – I don't know if my family's going over to the British this year, so I might have to bring the PS5 over and play some Madden.
You got to do it, man. You got to do it. Who are some of your closest buddies out on tour right now?
Man, it's a lot of the Georgia guys, a lot of these Sea Island guys. Keith Harmon, Patton Kazire, JT Poston, Sepp Straka, play a lot of practice rounds with him.
Yep.
Even though he played for the wrong side of the Ryder Cup, he's still a Valdosta boy.
Yes, he is.
Man, we got a good crew. It's a traveling circus out there. Like we're all individuals. We're all competing against each other, but we're kind of all family. Like that's kind of our family out there of the 100 some odd guys out there on the PGA Tour. You see them every single week. So you get to be friends with a lot of those guys, and especially in the Ryder Cup, like I said, knowing those guys more on a personal level, knowing their families, knowing what makes them tick, kind of getting in their world a little bit, you become really close to those guys. And like when Colin Morikawa won Pebble this year, I was super pumped for him. I mean, almost to the point where it's the joy of what you feel of a tournament, you feel it for somebody else. And I love when my friends win, because it motivates me to get better. And like, hey, Russell Henley won the Arnold Palmer Classic. Like I can do that.
Yeah.
Like it helps motivate me to get better and keep going.
Is it different with some of the guys you mentioned, you know, playing a casual practice round or like a Thursday, Friday? Is it different like a Sunday in the hunt and you get paired with one of your guys? Like, are y'all still cutting up and hanging out, you know, on Sunday, or is it pretty quiet? Just kind of depends on who it is.
It depends on who it is, but it's definitely a little different. Like if I get paired with one of those guys Sunday at Augusta, like we might be cutting up a little bit on the first hole or first tee, but we're really there for one reason. We're both trying to win, and you got to kind of get in your own little zone, you and your caddy, and get in your own little cadence. So it's a little different, but there's times to do it and times not. And late on the Sunday is probably a time to lock in a little more.
Speaking of locking in, tell me about the gum, because if you watch Harris play, he's chomping on the gum. Is this just part of the routine now? Is that just what's kind of keeping him mellow?
Yeah.
Is it a specific flavor? What are we doing?
Yeah, my caddy buys it. Mentos Spearmint, I think. He just gets it at gas stations every week. I really feel like it helps my rhythm. I mean, they say it like keeps your brain going. I guess my mom would always give me mints when I'm going to take the SAT or ACT. I don't know. I heard Phil Mickelson talking about it one time. Heard some other guys do it, and I was like, I'll try it out. And this is probably 6 or 7 years ago. And it's just kind of all of us. Like we all kind of get in our own routine, and have our own habits, and when something is going well or we think it helps us, then we're going to keep doing it. But it, and there's no kind of rhyme or reason. Like I'll kind of start out with it. I might lose it for a few holes and then might throw one back in on number 7 or 8. Like, yeah, just kind of whenever I feel like I need it, or maybe I'm starting to run a little too fast or run a little too hot, pop in a piece of gum and kind of settle back down a little bit.
So you mentioned Phil, and I don't want to get you in trouble here with a hot topic, but having Brooks back on the PGA Tour, like, what's the feel from all the players out there? Like, is it an open arm scenario, or, you know, a little standoffish, you know, a little arms distance? How has kind of all that been here the last couple of weeks with having him back?
Yeah, it depends on the guy. I would say 50-50. Some guys are still a little pissed about it, of him being able to come back and get in all the tournaments. From a competitive standpoint, I think it's awesome. Ultimately, having the best guys play on the PGA Tour is what it's all about. I hate that all the LIV stuff happened and kind of fractured the game. I think it's made the PGA Tour a lot better, and has caused the PGA Tour to look themselves in the mirror and see what they need to get better at to hold on to some of the best players in the tour. And I love the PGA Tour. Like, I didn't want to go to the LIV. Some of these trophies that I've won, like the Travelers Championship, that's been around for 70 plus years. Arnold Palmer's name's on that trophy. Like, there's not many trophies in the game where you can have your name next to some of these legends. And for me, that's on the PGA Tour. But with Brooks coming back, I mean, he's a competitor. I know that he missed out on some of his prime years of playing in some of the biggest golf tournaments, and figuring out that, like, we don't play for the money. The money's great. The purses are great out there. But what keeps me getting up every day and going out and practicing and working as hard as I can is I want to beat some of the best guys in the world. I want to prove to myself that I'm one of the best players in the world, that I can have a chance to win these tournaments. I'd love to win a major someday, maybe a few of them. Like, that's what gets me going. I'm 36 right now, about to turn 37. I know my time is going to end at some point of being able to compete. So I'm going to try as hard as I can with these last years. Maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's more, of giving it all I have to do what I have been wanting to do since I was 10 or 11 years old. Watching guys like Davis Love, watching guys like Freddie Couples, Tiger, like, that's what I've wanted to be doing for a long time. And here I'm doing it, and I'm going to do it for as long as possible. But hopefully in the next few years, more guys will come back. I hate it for Phil, because he was one of my idols growing up. I went to the Masters in 2004. I was there on Sunday when he won his first Masters, and I still get chill bumps of, like, what it made me feel like, of him making birdie on 16, of him making the putt on 18. Like, that was one of the coolest moments for me in golf, of going to a live sporting event, and how his career, I guess, has been stained a little bit from doing the LIV Tour, really sucks, because he's one of the generational players. I mean, it was him and Tiger.
Yeah.
Back when I was growing up. So it really sucks. And I don't know what the fix is. There's a lot of smart people on tour. I'm so glad that Tiger Woods is on the board now. He's not playing much golf anymore, but he's involved. He's so involved in the tour of making it as good as it can be. And we'll see where it goes. But for me, I love seeing Brooks back, because it just adds to the competitive nature on the tour. And whatever drives our market, whatever helps our fans, is what's best for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, since Jake started the hot topics, I've got one more question as well. I'll start it with a yes or a no question. When you're in tournament week, say the Players a week ago, when you get back home, is Golf Channel on? Is Live From on in the background? Or are you really just kind of staying away from the golf stuff to get your mind off of it, which would be totally understandable after grinding day after day? So do you watch Golf Channel during the week?
I really don't. After around the only time I would watch golf is if I'm playing late on a Thursday or a Friday, I'm watching some of the telecasts
sure
in the morning of where guys are hitting it, how are the greens reacting, where guys are making putts from. That's really the only time I watch golf. And then, like, I missed the cut this past week, but I'm watching the past couple holes on Sunday, pulling sure. for some of those guys. But yeah, I mean, I don't do Instagram. Mm-hmm. I have Twitter. I don't really follow a whole lot of golf stuff. I'm more just Georgia sports or NFL stuff. I try to unplug from that as much as possible, because I mean, I'm sure y'all got it as well with Instagram and Twitter of you have a good day, you have a bad day. There's going to be, especially the people that bet on golf, like some of the stuff
it's gotta
I get
be
on,
insane. It's got to be
worse. On Twitter worse, is unbelievable. So
I can't even imagine. I asked that for this purpose. Brandel Chamblee on Golf Channel, who is he gets out there, man, and he says some wild stuff people think. I'll say this about Brandel Chamblee. I am hard pressed to find another analyst who is as prepared or as articulate as Brandel Chamblee is. This dude could say something that you might think is the most wild thing ever, but he backs it up with stone cold facts. And I watch him, I'm like, this dude is an animal. He is a straight beast when it comes to broadcasting. So I know he kind of ruffles a lot of people's feathers, and I totally get a lot of tour golfers probably just don't even tune into it, but he riles a lot of fans up. But I'll be damned if he does not bring the heat with every single statistic to back up some of his claims. So I'm a Chamblee fan. I'll just go ahead and say that.
Yeah. So I probably have a different relationship with him than most people. I've had lunch with him before. He's been a super nice guy to me. Been a very nice guy to my caddy. Bought my caddy dinner down in Orlando for the Arnold Palmer there at the same restaurant. But it's a role he plays,
of course,
and he's good at it. And
yeah,
it gets people talking about golf as much as possible. But you're right; he is one of the most prepared guys. I mean, the statistics he pulls out are incredible. So I think that's his role, and he does a good job with that. I will say I wish, from a player's perspective, I wish he would come out on the range more or the putting green more and get to know guys, talk to guys. Like, Kiz does that a lot.
I'm sure
trying to think of other guys. Colt does that. Azinger used to do that a good bit. We like that, like, because it gives us a little more trust of, like, they know what's going on with us instead of just sitting in the booth and
just not blasting really guys. Yeah.
Just blasting guys and not really know what's going on. But I know Brandel plays that role. He's really good at that role. But he's also a good dude. Like, if some of these golf fans would go out to dinner with him or go to lunch with him, you would see how smart this guy is and how much golf knowledge he has.
Yeah. Remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And he gets a bad rap, but he can handle it.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. What other questions you got for us, Harry? We got about 7-8 more minutes left.
Man, as much as y'all want to talk golf, like, football fascinates me. It's my favorite sport. my mom talked me into not playing anymore after I broke my arm when I was like 11. Handing the ball off. I broke my left wrist. On a reverse, handing the ball. So that was the end of my football career.
That's a bad deal, Harry.
But, man, I love watching.
I mean, you have a great frame, 6'3", 190. I mean, you definitely could have been slinging it around back there from the pocket.
I got a decent arm. I can throw it pretty good. Yeah. But, man, some of those routes, like, how much defense? Like, I think I would love playing quarterback because I would just be in the film room the whole time of what the defense is doing. How am I going to pick apart this? This guy's running this route. Like, the option routes really confuse me of how you know what the receiver is going to do, because I guess you and the receiver have to be on the same page of looking at the same thing. If the safety's doing this, the receiver's going to go this way. If the safety's doing something else, he's going to go the other way. Like, there's so many intricacies with playing the quarterback position that as much football as I watch, like, I have no idea what y'all are really doing out there.
Yeah, you get me sitting up in my chair now talking about option routes. but I mean, like, I think you can overcoach option routes to death. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's just the receiver and the quarterback being on the same page, being able to run through, you know, 10 to 15 clips, just say, you know, and usually the quarterback has a clicker. He's going to press play. He's going to press pause right there at the top of the break. Hey, what are you going to do? You know, the quarterback has an idea of what he thinks the receiver should do, but he's going to ask him, you know, what he's going to do. And, you know, depending on the intent of the play, sometimes it's to completely break leverage. Because you can break leverage, usually there's a pretty big hole. There's a reason why he's trying to keep you and funnel you somewhere else. But sometimes, man, he's off, and you want to take what they're giving you, take the 6-yard completion, and not go for the home run. But man, it takes a lot of reps and repetition and a lot of different looks too. Man, and sometimes I've caught myself, and you see a lot of quarterbacks do it. Man, you get hung up on that option route instead of just saying, hey, man, it didn't work out, and let's get to the backside progression and have other stuff working back into your vision. So,
like moving through it quicker, like that's what I would have a hard time. Yeah, is like just, waiting just for it to develop it. Yeah. Too much, and then you're so locked in on it that you lose somebody else.
Yep. And I had a coach tell me, like, always have your feet, you know. Drew mentioned grip earlier, you know, and as soon as you said that, you mentioned grip for a golf and, you know, your drop for a punter. Well, for quarterback, to me, it's about your feet. And for option routes, it didn't really click for me. Like, always have your feet prepared for the most left throw, you know, especially if they're to the field working there on the left side, because you don't have your feet closed off to throw a left to right slant ball coming into vision and, oh, crap, he's going to make a decision to go out. And they have to throw across your body 40 yards across the field. So having your feet prepared for like the worst case scenario to the left and being able to throw kind of, you know, across your body for anything else.
Harris, next time you come to a Georgia game, you just got to stand with Jake. I've done it. I did it all last season, standing with Jake as we're, you know, on the field or in the press box, wherever we might be, and they're lining up and they're kind of doing pre-snap motions. I mean, he tells you exactly what's about to happen. It's fascinating. And us, all throughout the football season, he's talking about how much football he learned while in the NFL. We talked about this, I want to say, towards the college football playoff starting. Like, Jake, if you went back on a college football team right now, like, how big of an advantage would you have? He was like, the biggest advantage, just from being able to process knowledge, read defenses, XYZ. It brings me up to a clip that I saw from Barstool. They were talking to Alex Caruso, who's an NBA player, and they asked him, how many NBA players, where if you plucked them, one of them, and put them on like a 14 seed in the tournament, how far would that team go? How many players could do that? And Caruso was like, I think like 30. He was like, I think there's 30 guys in the NBA, 30 guys, where if you put them on a 14 seed, that they could make a serious Final Four run. He was like, start with Giannis. He was like, who could guard Giannis? Nobody could guard Giannis. Start with LeBron, you know, go to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, put Steph Curry out there. He's just going down the list saying, you put one of these guys on these mid-major, you know, say a Georgia, even as an 8 seed, he's like, they're going to win the national championship. I found that to be pretty fascinating.
That's crazy.
I know. It's wild. It's wild to think of. So it's fun watching it with Jake. We got to make sure that happens coming up this season, because
I'd love to.
This guy's a wealth of knowledge.
I don't know about that. It's just a lot of guessing and a lot of film watching and seeing, you know, the same plays being run over and over with just a little bit different eye candy, you know, a little bit different motion, a little bit different way of how they're getting to it. But, man, a lot of times, I mean, there's just a lot of the same plays being run, especially you see it in the NFL, man, where coaches are stealing plays left and right. It happens all the time, man. The NFL gets the, you know, in the locker room, and especially in the QB room, man, it's a copycat league. If a play works, you know, a certain way against a certain defense, man, just figure out how to do it your way, and generally you'll have success with it. I mean, Ben Johnson took, you know, a fake play where he made Jared Goff fake stumble, right, and then throws a wheel route up the sideline against
the Bears,
yeah. And man, it works, dude. It's hilarious, and it's NFL is a coach's league, man. And they, man, when they dial it up, they dial it up.
I love it. I love it. Well, Harry, you've said it all, brother. Thank you so much for joining us on Punt and Pass. This has been absolutely incredible. I know everybody's going to be rooting you on when you tee it up at Augusta National in a couple of weeks for the Masters. And of course, for all the major championships and signature events, you're a damn good dog. You're an awesome guy as well. So thanks so much, brother.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I enjoyed it, and we'll do it again. Hopefully at a football game. I got to come. Let's do it. Come on, Bathens more.
Come on. There you go. There you go. There he is, Harris English. Be sure to follow us on social media at Punt and Pass. I'm at Drew Butler. He's at From Jake. Have a great week, everybody, and we will talk to you next week. See?
This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
The 2026 Lincoln Aviator SUV turns a robust list of features into a world of premium experiences. Excite your drive with impressive horsepower and torque. Customize your comfort with available perfect position seats featuring 30 configurations. Make room for two more passengers with powerful third row seats that can fold flat with the touch of a button. And immerse yourself in the finest expression of design and services with available elevated packages. Experience it for yourself by visiting your local Lincoln retailer.